We get some lights up here. Feels very dark. That's better. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Social Machines 4, which is thankfully the last session of the day. It's been a long day already. We have two final sessions for today, and we're looking at sort of an hour for the first one, maybe half an hour for the second, but lots of questions. Do feel free to come in and out. We have, because there's no roaming mic, we're thinking about trying, if you have questions, when there are questions, just queue up at the front and speak them into that mic. We'll see if that works. If it doesn't, then we'll just go back to speakers parroting back what the questions were. So we'll give that a try and see if it works. So the first speaker up for our final session of the day is Jared Zimmerman, and he's going to be talking about interface vision.
Hey there. So first I just want to say that if there's anything up here that you like, we'll try to get it rolled out within a month, a week, whatever. If there's anything you don't like, you'll never see it. Don't worry. So one of the main things that the design group really is focused on is translation, and not translation in the sense of not translation in the sense of languages, but translation in the sense that users tell us concerns, they tell us problems. And a lot of times people can't vocalize exactly what an issue is. I don't like this, this doesn't function the way I expect it to, I want to do this and it does something else. So our job is a translator. We take what people say, the literal words they say, and turn them into actionable things that we can have our amazing developers build. A lot of times the tools of our translation are, you know, crazy whiteboards full of these meaningless boxes, giant walls of post-it notes, or these little diagrams that only we as UX designers seem to ever really understand. the three kind of things I wanted to focus on today, and there's probably more than three, but I'm going to call them three things, are these things. So when users talk about their use of our products, it really comes to break down into these three big buckets. And we can see them in different ways. We can say, I don't have time to edit Wikipedia, which is something we hear a lot of when we ask, do you edit Wikipedia? I don't have time for that. I'm a student, I'm a busy mother. There's so many things that take up my day that I don't have time for this extra thing. So we think about that and we say, like, what does that mean? What does it mean to say, I don't have time for this? So we can think about the fact that maybe they think editing Wikipedia takes too much time. Maybe they think that there's nothing you can do on Wikipedia that only takes a second or two. Oh, that cursor, I was trying to move it, but it's actually on the screen. But the thing is, we have time for other things. We have time for all these things that we think are important. And maybe they are important. But I think that's not the case. I think that there are times in our lives where we have nothing to do. And maybe this for you is something that, you know, it's just a quiet moment of contemplation. But for most people, we try to occupy every single second of our lives with some type of diversion. And I think for us, for people in product and design at the foundation, we want to battle for that cognitive surplus that we see people using. So what we think it is about, actually, is not that there's nothing to do, but that we need to give you a better hint about what those tiny things are that can occupy these little minutes here and there, waiting for the bus, waiting for a download. You know, you're sitting, you just got back from lunch, and you're not ready to get back to work. You know, we kind of want to take all of these little moments of your day, and, you know, sure, you can spend them on Facebook if you like, but we have other intentions. So, what I'm going to show you guys today is a bunch of little tiny vignettes, little sketches. Some of them are real, some of them are completely made up for this talk, but they hopefully will illustrate some of the things we're talking about at these different points. So this one right here, I have a laser pointer, ties into Wikidata. So every Wikidata item has an interesting little description. They're very short. There's some rules around how you write them, but right now those aren't surfaced on Wikipedia. So one of the ideas that we had was this super quick little way of someone doing a little micro contribution, here visualized on mobile, where they can take, you know, they read the article or they just know a little bit about the subject and just write this one tiny little sentence, and then you can see right there an existing feature of showing the last editor to an article. This is something that you can see I'm very interested in, being a, I don't know, level 8 user, super user on Foursquare, is it's a dumb thing. Like, people say, this isn't fun, this isn't a game. But for me, like, improving this like location information actually is kind of entertaining. And Foursquare has done an amazing job at making it so quick to do. I can knock out like 100 of these in maybe 5 minutes. You know, other people are on the same bandwagon, and I seem to spend the same amount of time here going through and saying, like, you know, is this place the same as this place? Yes, 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 no, no, no. It doesn't feel like, when we think about Wikipedia, it doesn't feel like editing. It doesn't feel like writing. It doesn't feel like, you know, prose. But it's still a contribution. We want to take a lot of the learnings that we see elsewhere in the world and try to figure out great ways to bring some of those, we call them micro contributions, into Wikipedia. One of the things we want to try early on is a location-based micro contribution. So you see here, you know, you have an article about a place. There's some question as to what it is. If you read any of the Wikidata sessions earlier, you know that there's this concept that individual wikis tend to store locations separately. We'd love to have that being pulled from Wikidata. So one of our ideas is to take the idea that you create the location information on a local wiki, and then we can store on a local wiki and also push it back to Wikidata. So you see here, you know, the person can choose a location. It's great on mobile because you might actually be at that place, which is a great use of mobile. Or even say, like, this is not a place, and you stricken it from the database of questions like that. A lot of questions we have around, you know, people saying, like, I don't have time for Wikipedia, is they're saying that I don't have time to write an article, because that's what they think contribution to Wikipedia is, writing an article. So, you know, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. Instead of that, we're saying, you know, what if what you were saying is, I don't think that's true, or I doubt that. What if the contribution is allowing someone to be, you know, one of the fact checkers? A way to get into this and say, without even being in an edit mode, I can go through and say, this piece, I question it. And then basically that creates a work queue for someone else to go and find more details about that. So the other thing that when people say, you know, I don't have time for something, a lot of times it comes at that to, like, they don't really know enough about something, or they feel confident. So right now we're actually rolling out a few projects, and if you're familiar with beta features, you'll probably have seen this. This shows article hover cards. Hover cards allow you to preview blue links that are on Wiki with an image and a snippet of text and the last edit date. So things like this, and then this is just a sketch for a future thing, a footer on articles that kind of explains further reading. If you're familiar with sites like Medium or lots of other blogs, you're familiar with this kind of feature where we parse through and we try to find related content. People tend to go on these kind of tangents of reading a bunch of related content. So this, paired with things like cover cards, allows people to really explore, find related content, and really kind of find a thing that both interests them and that they feel confident in editing. So the next big thing is, I'm afraid I'll mess something up. And this is another pretty common refrain that we hear from people. We were doing some user testing recently, and not only did we hear the phrase, I accidentally ended up in this mode where I saw all of the code. They had internet edit mode. And we're like, you did it right. And they were freaked out. the other thing is, you know, it goes back to confidence. Like I said before, you know, I'm afraid I'll mess something up. The fact that we don't have an environment where people feel safe to play. So that's another thing we're trying to tackle right now, is the idea of safe to fail, safe to play. What kinds of things can we do that will allow someone to feel like it's not the end of the world if they mess up? You know, one of them is a social thing, not having people yell at them. But let's play a game real quick. Okay, so this is a really great article. I don't know if you've ever read it, but it's nice. You could read this whole thing, and you'd probably get some idea about what this thing is. Or I could show you this, and you might know a little bit more about what this thing is. But what's missing? Anyone? Ah, yes, exactly. So, if you've been to the eye doctor ever in your life, you've probably seen this thing, and then this thing, and then there's this thing, I don't know, in the U.S., that eye doctors do. They say, better one, better two, better one, better two. Okay, so we're gonna do this. As soon as this light comes up, just yell which one is better. That's what I thought. that's great. I mean, like, but I mean, like, that feels weird, right? We don't want this just to be this thing that kind of automatically edits Wikipedia. That doesn't have like the hand of the author. Like, I think that's what we all have both kind of an interest in and also a fear of. That it could just be this automated process run by bots or run by aggregate numbers of people. So if we step back and say, what if we get to an article that doesn't have a picture, but maybe it's on comments? Maybe we can say, what just happened here is a game, and what happens here powers this. So this is the existing, for the most part, visual editor image insertion dialogue. But what if the order of these photos was actually powered by what you guys just did? By hundreds of thousands of people choosing the best photo of whatever. So that's kind of one thing that we're hoping for. You know, it's safe to fail. Like, how many people, you know, want to sit for hours and look at, you know, probably beautiful pictures all over the world? Having that be a simple game, we think could be very powerful. So, a lot of things we want to talk about are about photos. Photos feel pretty safe. People, you know, may be fearful of writing full articles or making major edits to existing articles, but pictures feel very safe. So we want to do a lot of things to take the process of adding photos and uploading photos and make that a lot simpler. So you see, this is a sketch of the update to the visual editor image dialog. Not only does it include, you know, full photos that aren't cropped, it also includes a way to access images you've uploaded and upload images. So this is a great start, and it's moving in the right direction. But what we'd love to do is actually say, that cool photo you just took while you were in Africa on your desktop, let's just make you be able to drag it from your desktop directly on the computer. So this is a sketch by one of our designers who's working with the multimedia team of a way to kind of natively integrate something like the upload wizard directly into the page. So drag it, put the most basic details in, and if you actually aren't comfortable with all these kind of extra details about licensing and source attribution, we can actually put this thing in kind of this null mode where it's only visible to editors who might be able to help you out and add this. So this is an interesting graph I found. This is up to date. This is from Flickr. So this is as of today, I guess. I don't know what the time span is, but I think it's at least a year. So this is the most popular, and I guess Flickr is probably one of the top 3-5 photo storage sites right now. These are cameras that are uploading content to Flickr. So let's think about that. I mean, those are the cameras. I don't have mine because it's distracting, but it's over there. And it's something I have with me all the time. So dragging a file from your desktop to Wikipedia is great, but my photos aren't on my desktop. They're on my phone. They're in iCloud. They're already on Flickr. So we just released this cool app for iOS and Android. So if you haven't downloaded it, download it now in like 15 minutes. But one of the cool things about having a native app is we can send you push notifications. And we promise not to send too many of them. But if I'm walking around town, suddenly I'm on a scavenger hunt. So now all these articles with no photos, suddenly my pocket vibrates. I walk around, I take a great picture with apparently the most popular phone on Earth, which I happen to have as my only camera, and now I just became an editor. I became a contributor. So this is great, and you know, first we can say, like, if you think about the Wikidata games that I guess Magnus made, they ran out of some of the work cues in like a second, and those games were things like determine the profession of someone or determine the gender of someone. They burned through work cues in like days, and this was thousands and thousands of items. So if this happened on a few thousand phones, you know, would we illustrate every single Wikipedia article in a week? Possibly. So we have to start thinking of other cues. You know, things like, you know, like maybe trump someone else's photo, take a better photo of something else. While we have, you know, the phone in your hand, we might as well engage you in other ways. Make sure that your notifications are here. You know, you're sitting on the bus again, and someone replied to you in your talk page. You don't have to wait till you get home. It's there waiting for you. So, come on, guys. So I really needed that, because one of the things that keeps people sticky and working on sites like ours, like community sites, is appreciation from other people. We know from the analytics group can tell you that research studies have shown that this simple act of thanking someone is this powerful drug. It keeps people around. So the thanks feature rolled out, I guess, about a year or 2 years ago now. And we want to keep extending it. We want people to feel the reason to stay with the site, to come back to the site. The growth team is doing some amazing exploratory work right now, thinking about how to get people, you know, either via email, other means of saying, hey, you know, you made these edits to this page, and now thousands of people have benefited from your edits. Thousands of people have read what you wrote. So one of the things we're experimenting with now is a way of having anonymous readers be able to thank editors. And because the term thankpocalypse has been thrown around as a sequel to selfiepocalypse from a few years ago, we want to make sure that we don't do things like that, and we want to have really smart ways of kind of rolling those thanks up into, you know, unified thanks, so I don't come to my Echo notification feed and see that, like, there's 1,000 notifications from, you know, 1,000 readers thanking me. While that would feel great, probably wouldn't be very helpful. So, what we're thinking about also is here, you know, it really showing the idea of this is created by humans. We hear a lot of times, like, oh, you know, do you edit Wikipedia? No, that's not for me. That's someone else. Someone else, like, edits Wikipedia. And we're like, no. No, it's you. So ways of, and these are just lots of different sketches of ways of showing, you know, who edits Wikipedia, who's monitoring this page. People say, like, you know, what if I do vandalism? Is it going to stick? We're like, well, you know, probably not on this article, but, you know, maybe on another one. So ways of surfacing, like right now we are doing this, and you can see this right now on the mobile web, but ways of other showing, like, you know, the popularity of a page, how many people are editing and viewing, really going one step further into kind of personalizing, you know, not only original authors, but like the most prolific authors, how many edits, how things have just grown and changed over time. That all kind of comes along with the idea of humanizing Wikipedia. The idea that the people you interact with on Wikipedia are actual human beings, and that you should be nice the way you're nice in real life, hopefully be nice to people. There's lots of different ways to do that. You know, years ago it was proposed, you know, profile pictures, that's another thing that there's actual research on showing that that human faces, human forms, remind people that, that this name they're interacting with is a person. And this person has interests. And this person, they interact with the site in ways that it's not this surface detail of what you put out in the world saying, this is what I'm interested in, is it builds something based on what you actually do. And I don't have a screenshot of it, but what you probably saw maybe 6 months ago was an experiment on mobile where we had these mobile profiles are actually built dynamically with your edits. And so this is an idea of what something like that could look like on desktop, of a profile built solely around what you're actually doing, not just who you say you are. And then really taking that further and saying, you know, the idea that, you know, I can go to any page and actually see other humans and how they've interacted with that content. So, one last thing I want to talk about. You've probably heard about it. I don't know if you have that in this country. It's a season. So there's this thing called winter. And there's some things that winter is and some things that winter isn't. So winter is not a skin. It's not a product. It's not a feature. Winter is a platform that the design team is using to experiment with lots of little changes that we may be rolling out at different time scales. If you're familiar with beta features, you'll probably recognize the compact personal bar. That's a beta feature you can try right now. I want to go through a few kind of the anatomy of winter, and then Brandon after me is going to go and talk in detail about all the things. So the interesting things about winter is that you have a fixed search with a table of contents that's always visible no matter where you're on the page. The compact personal bar, a right sidebar that has content that enriches the article, and I'll go into that a little bit more. I don't know what we're calling this, an article navigation bar that tells you what mode you're in, what you're interacting with, whether you've actually watched the page or not, and then the actual content. So when you scroll the page, you can see that the header stays fixed. We clean up the margins. And what this allows us to do is do really interesting things with that search bar. So we have some experiments around rich search that shows images, that shows snippets, that does best matching. And you see some of this already with the new search technology. It's not visualized like this, but the actual technology behind it is working. And then we want to do what we've been trying to do all this time, is highlight the amazing content by all the sister projects. So you can see here that we have results in other languages, we have results from Commons, we have results from Wiktionary. When you do a search on any of the sites, we want to make sure that we highlight the content from the site you're on, because you're there, but make sure that you know that there's all this amazing content from other sister sites. So then, as we say, you know, we design, you know, mobile first, we design, you know, X first, for all these different things, we want to make sure that you have the same amazing experience with search on mobile as well, but obviously mobile appropriate. So one of the other things that we're using the winter platform to test out is some changes to info boxes. So as some of you may know and be frustrated with, info boxes are actually make-believe. They're not real. They're not a component in MediaWiki. They're some hacks and template text. So our experiments are things like trying to make these kind of rich module-based info boxes. So this is one direction that we've thought about, something that's content-specific. But the other direction is to kind of explode info box altogether and say, as I'm reading, show me relevant information that enriches my reading experience. So we can say, you know, there's a link right here for Wiktionary that talks about the origin of this word. And so we pull that in. I don't have to go to Wiktionary right now. I can go later. This talks about the Mayan civilization. So I'm like, well, I could hover over that, and I could see a hover card. Or maybe just as I'm reading that section, there's just a little blurb of enrichment. Or I go here, and I'm like, oh, that picture was really cool. You know, show me other pictures from Commons that are about the same category. Or add my own. Another cool thing about winter is it allows us to start playing with the idea of content language. So right now we have 380 sites that are all different sites, which if you ask someone who's not at this conference, they'll probably think we have one site with 380 languages. So what Winter allows us to start doing is playing with that kind of idea. What happens if you don't think you're going from site to site? What happens if you think you're just changing to the content language you want to read? So allowing us to start playing with the idea of making language be more prominent on the sites, individual sites. Okay, so like I said, Brandon will talk a little more about Winter, but I want to talk a little bit about how this thing is going to get built. So one of our designers, May, who if you were here a bit ago you saw, has been working with the design team on something called Wikifont. And Wikifont is a standardized library of characters that are delivered as a font, as a web font, to users. It's going to be available to all of our developers internally and anyone that's developing on the platform. It's great for cross-browser, it's great for mobile. It's really exciting that we're going to have this standardization across all of our sites for this iconography. It's part of a larger thing called MediaWiki UI. And MediaWiki UI allows us to call standardized controls with the same look and feel all over the site. And we have a style guide that we're working on, which should be out within a month or two, that explains how to use them, how to call them, behaviors around how you should construct forms, and just basically how you use these, and you'll be able to simulate them on desktop and mobile as well. So one thing that allows us to do is some interesting things around standardizing UI. So on the top, you see what the wiki text editor looks like in Winter. And then at the bottom, you see what Visual Editor looks like in Winter. And there's not a lot of differences. And that's the goal. The goal is that you could seamlessly switch back and forth whenever you need to. And the back end of this is already rolling out. You can kind of sort of do this now. And it'll only be getting better. We want you to be able to use whatever editor works best for you at any moment, back and forth. And have a set of tools and interface that makes sense and is logical and doesn't change when you go from one to the other. So, we love getting the unsolicited redesigns of Wikipedia. They're always exciting and entertaining and funny and inspiring and sometimes scary. I think they keep us on our toes, which is great. So this is my unsolicited redesign of Wikipedia. taking in a lot of the things that we're working on in Winter, a lot of the things that Brandon had worked on with Agora, and really trying to think all the things that are important to Wikipedia, things like language, things like editing, which is something that a lot of the unsolicited redesigns seem to forget, and tries to bring those to the forefront with a great reading experience. So the things that that we want to focus on, that we've been focusing on for the last year, and that we'll continue to focus on, is more contextual content, easy, impactful contributions that people feel like they can make in just a second, more ways to contribute, photos, small texts, ways of saying, I think this is wrong, ways that people feel like they're not really super invested in, and other ways that they feel like they can fail fast and fail safely. And then with Winter, we're testing out this new responsive skin that's consistent across our platforms. So thank you guys, and thanks to my team. I think we have some time for questions. So if you want to yell them out or walk down here, whatever works best.
Where are the diffs in Winter? I can't see diffs from previous versions. If I go to history, I see no diffs.
The page diffs?
I can answer that.
Good.
It's all pulled from the API. The API doesn't include diff information, so there's no way to go get it.
Yeah, so Winter is definitely, it's a prototype. It's not a skin, so you can use it. But it will not have all the functionality, doesn't do all the things you expect it to do, because it is a prototype and it is not a skin.
We pull it from the API and Visual Editor.
We'll get there.
Good luck.
You can pull the diffs, but it... Never mind.
Next to the aisle there?
Yes.
You said that users can do things so easily, and as I've already seen with the Wikidata game, for example, it also leads to more errors and things like that. Sometimes even more vandalism. What if the backpage editors make up a small proportion, but what if someone uploaded something really disgusting the Eiffel Tower.
I promise that happens every day. So yeah, no, I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm very active on Wikidata, and one of the Wikidata games, the merge game, was actually doing item merges the incorrect way. And it caused a lot of problems for Wikidata editors. The developers were really responsive, they fixed the game, and you know, things were fine. We have to always balance these things. We can say, you know, there was 100,000 edits in a day, and you know, 10,000 were bad, and then 2 days before there were 10,000 edits and 1,000 were bad. Like, did we move the needle? Like, do we want more editors? Do we want more good edits? Do we want more bad edits? I think we always have to be, you know, looking at this, thinking about everything we do, and making sure that overall we're improving things and we're not putting the burden on our existing editors to go up and clean up after all these micro edits that we're thinking about rolling out.
Okay. So, I'm wondering, there was a session in here earlier that was about human-centered design and how it can be applied for designing software and technologies around Wikipedia. So what I'm wondering is, how does the design team take advantage of human-centered design strategies, and how do you balance listening to your users with the designer's intuition?
So one of the things that we've recently done in the design group is we've hired Abby Ripstra, who is our lead user researcher. She's going to be building a team of her own within the UX group to do a lot of qualitative user research and work closely with the analytics group. So what that gets us is not only the ability to go out and do exploratory research ahead of time to come up with the kind of problems we want to solve, it also allows us to evaluate our designs early on. So when we have something as simple as a paper prototype, as simple as a bunch of concepts that we want to do a card sort for having people organize them into constructs that make sense for them. So I think the design team, as long as I've been here, I feel has actually been very data inspired and research inspired in our designs. And so we have to balance that with, like you said, with our expertise and our understanding of design. Everyone on the design team has years of experience. And with experience comes the ability to, you know, to listen and to know when we're wrong. Striped shirt. No one will hurt. So I think no one likes change for change's sake, not even us. I would say there's nothing that we do on the site or in any of the products that's just on a whim to please ourselves. Everything we do is driven from some need by some set of users. And I think what happens in some cases is that you may not be the user that's driving that need. And you know, we all have this situation where we, as designers, we have to make sure we don't design for ourselves. And I think as users, we have to be aware that there are other users that are not like ourselves. And I think it's just growing that awareness to say, you know, everyone's being listened to. But we have to just be aware that maybe that product is not for you.
But just to extend that question, I think it's really important to get more in contact with the community, because I totally understand and support what you do and what you want to do and that you have a wish, but what's happening in the community is that there are massive forces to stay how we are, and there are still people working on monolith. Yeah. A lot of editors do that. And I think part of the problem is that they just get the final result at some time in their language version. They don't look at data and they don't look at the sites where all the stuff is discussed. They just get the final result and they say, okay, no, not for me.
Yep.
In German Wikipedia, to finish that up, we had a vote that finished yesterday against the media viewer.
Yeah, so I think to answer that, the idea is that, you know, about a year ago now, we rolled out the beta features framework. And the hope and the goal of that was to allow people to play with and experiment with features far, far ahead of time of them being rolled out stable on the site. We've been trying to have kind of almost like a 6-month timeline, which, you know, for most companies, it's a huge timeline for rolling out a feature when we consider it, you know, almost done. So I think, you know, there was a formation of the new community liaison group. We've had community liaisons before, but now we have a structured group for that. I think with their help, working directly with product design, there'll be more messaging around new features. With beta features, we're experimenting with echo notifications to make sure that even if you're one of those users, we know that on German Wikipedia, the beta link has been removed, so you have to go to preferences. So the idea of using, you know, echo notifications to say, hey, there's a new beta feature, do you want to try it out? And if you're one of those people who don't want to try it out, don't try it out. But you know, that's the opportunity to converse with us, to give your feedback. And a lot of times, you know, with any online community, no matter how much outreach you do, there's going to be an end. People say, like, well, I didn't give my opinion, or I didn't get to talk. And I think we're doing as well as we can, and we're going to be getting better and better and better at making sure we get more feedback early on. Does that kind of answer your question? I mean, I think one of the other kind of little small nuggets of that was that, you know, it's you're saying like people are still editing Monobook, and that's great. It's, you know, it's an open source project. Keep making Monobook better. I think, you know, it's not going to harm anyone to make Monobook better. You know, in about a month, there's a team getting together that's going to be working on. I'm probably not going to say it right, but I think you're in the back there, Trevor. Of kind of componentizing a skin so that it can be kind of pieces can be called on a whim. So hopefully that'll allow skin developers to build things that are more flexible, that maybe they want their own personal skin that is different and kind of cuts back all the stuff that they don't feel belongs to them.
I think one of the problems is that these are the people who are building the content. And of course, there should be a division between content and design, but actually there isn't. As you said, with the templates and the info boxes, there's so much content that actually is designed. So the editors are doing designs. And if they are doing their designs on multiple skins, and we don't carry them to the new interface, we will have yet a mess.
Change is hard.
Monobook is not an interface.
Okay, I think I listened to the talk. I must say I admire all the efforts you put into the way to attract, if I understood well, an occasional editor. I mean, having a short time available and doing some editing, even putting in the picture. Aren't you a little bit too optimistic there? I mean, is it really the work like that? I think. Having done editing myself quite a lot, I must say that I really have to sit down, I have to do it carefully, and so on and so on. It never happened to me that even I corrected an occasional error I saw. I went to my computer, noted it down, and then I made a session, and I corrected all of that error.
So
I think never anything occasionally, because this is prone to error.
Sure. There's kind of two schools of thought that people talk about. And one is that there are, what's the population of the Earth right now?
7 billion.
7 billion. That there's 7 billion possible editors right now, give or take a few billion. And that the other is that there are, you know, 100,000. And we have to go find those 100,000. Or the other thought is that we could turn those 7 billion into editors. And I don't think we have a strong opinion about which is true. But our goal is to make it where you could accidentally contribute to Wikipedia. I think, you know, your point is well taken, that we have to think very critically about, you know, if an edit is too easy, is it too easy to make an, you know, a bad edit? But I think that's something that will, you know, that is solvable. I think when we kind of contemplate the idea of taking aggregate edits, taking, you know, solving kind of the big data problem of looking at, you know, can we see that 100 people did the same thing? You know, if you think about things like, you know, ClueBot, it's an amazing bot that runs on Wikipedia with something crazy like a, you know, 98 or higher percent chance of finding bad edits. You know, we have technology that can help us with those bad edits. So I personally don't think that there's, you know, so many negatives against making edits easier that should dissuade us.
Well, as someone who's felt excluded out of the editing club, I think this is a great idea because it can get an occasional editor a little more confidence. And we have to remember that we were all occasional editors at one point. And by being accepted and learning from good things and from bad mistakes, we became better editors. And I think we need more new editors to come in because of gender gaps, age gaps, cultural gaps. And this is a great gateway to try to reach those people.
Yeah, I mean, we, you know, there's an interesting idea called valid peripheral participatory participation or something along those lines. And the way that it was described to me was, we're in the UK, so I'll say, there was a football, a young child who liked football. And so as a small child, they had a favorite football player and they had a poster in their room. And so that was their first way of participating in football. And so they grew up a bit and they joined Football Little League, whatever you call that. and so, you know, then they were playing the sport at that point. And, you know, they looked up to other people and, they were on a team and suddenly, like, let's say they're in college and now they're going to college and they have a scholarship for that. Do they have that here? And then they become professional at this. So every step of the way from having a poster to having a favorite football player, that was participation in football. And so when we look at Wikipedia, right now we say, what is participation? And I think for a lot of people, participation means writing or creating articles or making major edits. And then, you know, it can start to expand from there. But how can we say, what else is valid participation? What if only thing I ever do is say that one photo is better than another? And I think we have to kind of open our minds to say, what is valid and what is helping the project. And I think all these things help the project. Any other questions?
Yeah, it seems to me with your presentation, with micro contributions, that actually identifying what tasks could be broken down into a smaller contribution is positive. Do you have any more ideas of what those might be or how we might be able to identify them?
Yes, we have lots. If you actually go on MediaWiki and search for micro contributions, you'll find an entire project page where people have been collecting ideas, and feel free to add your own. We have one interesting one around disambiguation. It's something that, you know, computers are pretty bad at and humans are really great at. So just a micro contribution, should this be pointed here or here? Yes, no, maybe. So yeah, we have tons of them, and we'd love to expand that list. I think that one way of thinking is that saying the same user that writes and edits articles now will be the user that benefits most from these micro contributions. And I honestly, I don't know that my viewpoint is shared by everyone, but I honestly don't think that's the case. I think that there's going to be some users that gravitate towards certain types of contributions and others that gravitate toward others. So I think that we're not taking away from editors that are doing lots of writing. We're just adding new ways to contribute for people that aren't currently contributing. I think your example of someone kind of trumping a photo and saying this is better. It's in the end, you know, there are ways to say, you know, this photo is sharper. This photo contains the entire subject matter. There are objective measures of something being better or worse, but you know, it's also subjective. But the same could be said of writing. My sentence is subjectively better than your sentence. So I don't think it's a new problem.
It's a question of style.
Yeah.
What's the distinction between Winter being a skin or not a skin or a platform or et cetera? Are we saying then that is likely to
be
rolled out?
I'm actually going to let you re-ask that with Brandon.
Hear more.
Yeah.
Cool.
Was there another one right there?
They are moving from the community of editors to the crowd editors.
What's the difference to you?
The difference is the crowd of editors doesn't talk. So, the question is, what is the future of the community tools? Discussions, votings, requests for deletion...
About 30 minutes ago, there was a really cool talk here about Flow, which is the discussion system.
Flow is how many years
old? How many years old?
Yeah. I didn't see any ability to discuss the changes.
Discuss a micro contribution?
Yeah.
This doesn't necessarily propose that that would be any different than it is now, except for the addition of Flow, which makes actually having discussions on Wikipedia not impossible. Sure. I would say everything Wikipedia is, but yes.
The idea is to apply the instruments that can distinguish good contributions from bad contributions by the of statistics.
Mm-hmm.
So do not consider single click as edit, but consider it as part of edit. So if several users make the same contribution, only in this case apply it.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying to the other question. We feel that there's probably going to be a spectrum of micro contributions. Some will be exactly equivalent to an edit now. You hit, you know, whatever the action is, you've saved it, it's done. On the further spectrum of micro contributions, we can think about things working in aggregate. Things like the photo rating that you guys just did. We can say that they are themselves an edit, but that edit is not visible on the site immediately. They're improving a database, and that database is shown later to other editors. So I think a lot of these contributions are going to fall along the spectrum of some of them are going to function as individual edits, and some of them are going to function as improving a database or being aggregated together before an edit is made. Does that answer the question?
Thank you for the talk, very interesting. I'm curious, what's the best way that academic researchers and the community at large can feed into the design process?
That is a great question.
Ask Kathy.
Probably our talk page. There's a design research talk page that's a subpage of the design talk page. I would say, you know, talk directly to the researchers. They're going to be, I would say, they're going to be our main channel for having academic research kind of feed into what we're doing. And Abby will be working to, you know, directly with our analytics team as well as, you know, external researchers to help us, you know, get the best learnings from what's going on in the world, informing our design process.
And Abby's right here. This is Abby.
Red hair, glasses, back of the room. Okay, yeah, there you go. Sorry, it's bright.
How do you deal with the challenge of designing holistically? I mean, you could take 15 or 20 features or interface elements and A/B test them and find that if you put all the answers of those tests together, it's actually not the optimal combination.
So we did this experiment where we had 100,000 shades of blue. That's a different company, sorry. So we do some testing, and with the forming of the design research group, we'll be doing a lot more. And like I said, we do this all the way through the process. We do it from concept to paper prototypes to just us writing about things. And then when we can, some of the designers will build prototypes that we can test with users, and we'll test like vastly different ideas. Pau Jenner, one of our designers, is working on a content translation tool, and he had some kind of very different ways that users could interact with it, and did a bunch of user testing around that, and then that informed his design. That was shown to the engineers, to the product people in that group, to help them make those decisions. We want to later balance the idea of using both quantitative and qualitative research to really kind of iteratively make designs better. But because of the size of our organization and our design team and our research team, we have to kind of decide when enough is enough and we have to move forward with something, knowing that we can always change it later. But you can be paralyzed by choice and just keep iterating on something and never actually build something. So that's one of our biggest challenges. I think Stephen Walling either wants to ask a question or add something.
Yeah, I just wanted to add on that. Generally speaking, the foundation doesn't A/B test in the kind of manner of a big multi-year A/B test where we test 10 versions of something and each one has a different button. We just don't have time to kind of do that kind of thing. Generally speaking, we're testing to see if the new interface causes any positive effect at all on the first contribution on the site. So we don't really test the kind of regular which design is better, which font is better,
So yeah, I would say that in addition to what Stephen said, it's like we do that, but not at the scale that a lot of other companies are able to do. And we'd love to think of kind of cheap ways of doing that better. And we're always coming up with new ways too. Anything else? Oh, sorry, I can't see. Yeah.
My reaction regarding interface improvements or changes is that it makes teaching Wikipedia harder. It makes teaching Wikipedia harder. For example, I thought the idea of the visual editor was a good idea. It makes editing easier. But actually, when it comes to teaching people how to edit, the teacher or the lecturer has to learn a new interface in order to properly teach the participants how to use
the Wikipedia. I think my concern is adding new interfaces in addition to the existing interfaces will make teaching Wikipedia harder. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's a great point.
And before joining the foundation, I worked at a company called Autodesk, which makes a piece of software called AutoCAD. And it's AutoCAD is an extremely complex piece of software that sometimes people go to school for years to learn. And every year, we would make the software easier. It would still do the same things. It would still be just as powerful, but it would be easier to use. It would be easier to learn. And we had this interesting feedback from a lot of our users, especially teachers, people who wrote books, people who taught classes, that there was this hostility around you've begun to invalidate what I've done. You've invalidated the fact that I spent 10 years learning this, the fact that I spent a year writing a book about this, and now you've changed it. Now you've kind of, they feel like you're slowly making their job unnecessary. And I don't have a great answer for it. I would say that yes, we do want to make their job unnecessary. We want to make it something you don't have to have a teacher to learn to do. We want it to be something as simple as a game. We want you to be able to feel confident that you can do it without seeking someone out. But we also want to make sure that there are those people that you can seek out and make it easier for them to help you if you ask for help. So.
on the page. I'm not sure whether it is proper or not. I'm just quite curious about your vision or your perception of this entire project.
About flow, specifically?
Oh,
I mean, you, we, like I said, we've been rolling out beta features, and one of the other places you can test out Flow is most beta feature talk pages are Flow enabled right now. So you can actually see some real conversations happening about beta features. If you go to the Compact Personal Bar beta feature, the talk page there, you can see Flow in action. You know, I have, you know, 3, 4, 5 jobs at the foundation, and, you know, when I'm PMing a beta feature in addition to everything else I do, you know, I was doing that for a feature that was using a talk page, and I was using it for a feature that was using a Flow-enabled page. And the amount of time spent for me to interact with the Flow-enabled project was a fraction of the amount of time it took me to enable with the talk page, the Wikitext talk page. So I love it. I think it's got a lot of room to grow. I think it's not perfect. But I think it's in the right direction. And I think, you know, we have had comments from people interacting and giving feedback on beta features who have never talked on a talk page before. And so we know it's working in that regard. We know that people who are uncomfortable with talk pages or uncomfortable with Wikitext can interact on flow pages where they haven't been able to on talk pages. And that's frustrating. I know. I went into a small edit-a-thon with a bunch of new users, and one of the things that someone was saying is like, you know, you translated this article from another language, and so you should go and insert this translation template to say what the source language was. And they tried to do it in Visual Editor, and there was kind of a stumbling block. It might have been that it wasn't possible. It might have been that they just didn't know how to do it, and so they had to switch to Wikitext to kind of finish the lesson. And I think that there's friction anytime things are changing, and I think it's probably just inevitable that happens, but hopefully, you know, the end will make it worth it. So I think we probably have time for maybe one or two more questions.
I think this is also due to a paradigm shift in design software development in the last decade. Before you had big books telling you the exact way to do something. And nowadays, you have more the paradigm. There are many ways to the same solution. And it's important that you're always enabled to shift between the ways. And that's what happened in the visual editor in the first version. It wasn't possible that...
and that's, like I said, that's being worked on now. It's already vastly improved the ability to kind of seamlessly switch back and forth, and will continue to improve.
So many ways aren't bad.
No, of course. But as a teacher, it takes more time to teach both ways.
I don't see any hands, and we're out of time. Thank you, everybody.